Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Good morning and welcome to another show of Atlanta Legal Experts. I am your host, Emily Rowell with Peachtree Offices, and I have Ryan McPherson in the background. Good morning.
Good morning.
Even though you'll be in the foreground a little bit.
All right.
Feel free to pitch in today if you like.
Oh, certainly. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful day out here in Buckhead, Atlanta, Georgia, and we have some great hosts or great guests today. We have Merlin Earl with Hagen Law. Good morning.
Good morning.
He's going to tell us what happens when you get into a car wreck. What do you do? So we're excited to hear that. And we have Nate Hansford.
Good morning.
He is with the law office of Nathaniel F. Hansford, and he's going to tell us a little bit about workers' comp and if you get hurt on the job. So we'll love to hear those stories. Lorena Saidi with Saidi Law Group.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for being here. She's a consumer bankruptcy law firm. And last but not least, we have Mark Cobb with the Cobb Law Group doing construction law and telling us all about that today.
Hi, Emily.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for being here. But we have our most important guest, our co-host, Alvaro Arauz.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Very good.
Thank you. I'm excited about today.
Me too. Me too. Thank you so much for your contribution. And we'll tell you a little bit about Alvaro at 3A Law Practice Management. They challenge themselves with complex assignments of all kinds. It requires them to constantly evolve, which in turn allows them to give better advice. Whether you're a brave attorney putting up your own shingle, a small firm adding more associates and staff, or a mid-sized firm that needs infrastructure re-engineering, they can help. They promote progress through productivity, and it's about results, not effort. So tell me how you got into this.
I kind of made it up. I was in medicine, and I was going to be a doctor and learn how to run clinics and dropped out to be a writer and then got mixed up with lawyers. And I was how come you're not doing this way? Well, I don't know how to do it that way. Well, I'll show you. And we just, my first firm got to, grew by 800%, got to 5 million in 5 years, 3 offices, 15 attorneys. So the internet came out. So got to learn a lot.
Oh, that is awesome. That is awesome. Now, tell me, you've got a little involvement in nonprofits. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. I'm a big fan of giving back to the community. I'm on.
And you're also a sponsor here.
A sponsor here, yes.
Which is awesome.
I'm a board member of Georgia Lawyer for the Arts that supports local artists with their legal needs, be it IP or corporate, and then some other groups that are really close to my heart.
Now, tell me more importantly, for all the attorneys listening out there, how do you actually help these practices? Give me a summary.
Well, I mean, for some firms, it's a matter of processes. We've gotten too big. We don't know who's doing what. Things are falling through the crack. And so just organizing the office. For other people, it's going to be finding the right staff, finding the right attorney. For other people, it's going to be using case management systems a lot better, be more efficient with technology and marketing. How do I brand myself? How do I promote myself? And get a greater market share of what's out there.
So basically, you're helping them do what they do best and then kind of doing the back end.
Absolutely. Lawyers should only, they should do two things, represent clients and foster new clients. And anything that takes them away from that, we've come up with the processes to delegate that away from them.
Awesome. Yep. Well, I know a lot that would definitely be able to use you for sure. And also, tell me about some insights on what any future things coming up.
Well, we have some exciting projects coming up. One of the things is I've gotten more out of state speaking on for national CLEs. And so just being able to provide services to the smaller firms that can't necessarily afford some of our packages, something a little more basic that's still helpful. It's a little bit more cost efficient. So we'll be launching mylawfirmconsultant.com here in the spring to help. So
awesome. Yeah. Well, we look forward to that. And now if you would tell our listeners how they can reach you.
You can reach me a variety of different ways. You can call me 404-219-8076. You can find us on the website at www.3alawmanagement.com, and that's the number 3 and the letter A. or you can email me at 3a@3alawmanagement.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being here.
No problem.
I look forward to your assistance.
Yes, I look forward to asking these people some questions.
Yeah. So we're going to go right to Merlin Earl. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
He is with Hagen Law, and he started his career in Georgia at the Fulton Solicitor General's office. He then moved up to the Fulton District Attorney's office. From there, Merlin moved into the corporate private sector by spending the last 10 years working for State Farm Insurance Company's legal department in Atlanta, Sharon Ware & Associates. After spending a good bit of time defending car wreck cases, Mr. Earl belongs to the Atlanta and County Bar Association and the State Bar of Georgia. He also is a member of the Georgia Trial Lawyers Association. He has now come to the good side and will be putting all that experience to work to help his clients get fair treatment in court. He has been at Hagen Law since 2011. Nice.
Yes.
Yeah. Good morning, yes. Merlin.
Good morning.
I know the cat doesn't have your tongue.
So let me ask a couple questions. Tell me about... what are the short and long-term benefits of retaining an attorney when you get in a car wreck?
Well, when you get in an accident, you know, it's a very catastrophic, emotional, you know, it's a trying time.
Mm-hmm.
But to get an attorney early on in the game, you really are getting advice about things that you absolutely have no idea that are coming your way, that are coming down the pike. You're going to incur expenses, you're going to be dealing with attorneys, you're going to be dealing with the insurance company. But the most important immediate benefit is you basically cut access off. I mean, the insurance company, you cut their access off to you.
Okay.
Because once you retain an attorney, they no longer have direct access to you. And that's very important.
Okay.
Because they will manipulate you and they will come at you to get whatever they want, and you immediately send them down the hallway. So that's the short and long-term benefit of getting counsel early on in the ballgame. But, you know, when you start incurring medical bills, medical expenses, and that sort of thing, you get advice on how to minimize, the detriment of that aspect of litigation. But it's important just to know where you're headed, and the only way to get that is
with an attorney.
Get an attorney.
So how do you know which attorney? Because, you know, there's a lot of billboard MARTA attorneys, which I don't recommend. But
you've never seen us on a billboard.
No, I don't want to either.
Okay, yeah.
So
we won't name any names.
Yeah. Why you guys over some of these other outfits?
That's a bad question, Alvaro. Okay. No, it's actually a good question. You can go on the internet and there's a bunch of names that will pop up, and you know how you talk to people, word of mouth, personal referrals. I mean, if you're looking for somebody to, you know, repair your car, you know, obviously you can go on the internet, but what's most broad, if you know somebody, talk to them. Do you know somebody? Word of mouth, who you know. But that is one way. The other way, obviously, is when you go on there, you got to do your homework. You got to know, you know, what you're looking for. And you just got to trust your instinct, you know, but you got to know what you're looking for.
Would you suggest talking to two or three to see who you jive with better?
You pick out three.
Kind of like your doctors, you want to pick out.
You do your balancing act. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to, you know, well, this one maybe, this one no, this one yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you would anything else. You know, you don't just get one and then make your decision. Okay, that, absolutely not.
Right.
You're going to go in the wrong direction if you act on it, you know, in that respect. But, we do... strictly personal injury, 100% personal injury, automobile accidents, slip and fall. So you want somebody that's going to specialize, you know, in the field that you need a lawyer for. You want somebody to specialize, and that's what we do. We specialize. So when you're looking for a lawyer, you want to look for somebody that does what you need, not somebody that's just, well, I do criminal, I do, you know, I do airspace law, you know. So the hodgepodge, I'll just take anything that walks through the door.
Sure.
Okay.
We call that rent law. Anything that pays the rent.
Exactly. So that's very important, though, to know that you're dealing with somebody that knows what they're doing, you know, and they know it well.
So what do you do, like, if you get in an accident? Obviously, you call 911, but...
Ooh, did you say 411 or did you say 911?
Who do you... Yeah,
did you say 911?
Yeah, but what about... what are some key things that you can do? Like, I know you guys actually have an app, which is helpful. Yes. What do you do when you have an accident?
When you have an accident, the first thing you do, obviously, like you say, you call 911. Please come.
Not your insurance company.
Well, actually, you do need to call them as well.
You do need to call them.
You do. Mm-hmm. You do need to call them. But it's not only what you do when you're involved in an accident. It's actually, it kind of sounds crazy to think, how do you prepare for being in an accident? You can't. But right. There's something that you should always do. You should always have your insurance card with you. And you should have your driver's license with you at all times. So that if you're in an accident, you have that information available, because you actually can be cited for not having your insurance card.
Right.
Okay? So if you're in an accident, somebody else calls it an accident, you don't have your insurance card, you're saying, like, wait a minute, why am I getting a ticket? You don't have your insurance card. Okay? Because you have to have proof that you are an insured driver.
Right.
It's important. So when the police show up, you have to be able to produce that information.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So on the scene, you should also, we all have, I mean, I see one, two, three.
I think everybody has one.
Have cell phones on this table. And we all have cameras on these phones. Mm-hmm. Take pictures.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
Take pictures of the damage to the cars. Okay? And the reality is that people say, well, did you go to the emergency room? You know? No, I didn't go. I went to work. Or I had to take my child to school. You know, I mean, they needed to go.
Should you go to the emergency room after a wreck?
It depends. If you're hurt, yes. But there are people that are hurt that don't go. You know,
right.
Because of other priorities and other responsibilities, they just don't go. And it's tragic. It's bad that you just can't for other reasons, but you should go, because in the long run, the question that you asked me earlier is, if you don't go, it's going to come back to haunt you.
Mm.
It's going to come back to haunt you. Again, that's why you get a lawyer early on in the process.
Right.
Because a lawyer is going to tell you, you know, if you're hurt, you need to go, because if you don't, it's going to come back to haunt you in the long run, because the first question is going to be is, well, you say you were hurt, why didn't you go to the emergency room? Okay. So, yeah, you know, take pictures, you know, get the other person's information, their telephone number, and do ask for their driver's license, because the reality is that a lot of people move around, and they move around real fast, mm-hmm. and you're going to need that information down the road.
I bet you could actually take a picture of their driver's license and
exactly.
their insurance.
Exactly, mm-hmm.
That
exactly.
way you know you've got the information. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Speaking of insurance, what's an appropriate amount? I mean, are you, you know, do you always get uninsured motorist coverage? Do you not get that coverage? Do you get the best coverage? What kind of, does it matter?
It absolutely matters. Insurance, you know, you kind of, you have to gauge it, you know, because, you know, like Emily already said, I was with State Farm for 10 years. So, but I didn't sell insurance, but obviously, you know, counsel for an insurance company. So we deal with those issues. We dealt with them. In terms of policies, you got assets. You got a $500,000 home. You got two cars. You know, you make $500,000, right, Elro?
Yeah, not quite.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
$500,000. You know, I should say $1 million a year.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're making seven figures. You get a big home. You want to protect those assets.
Sure.
Okay. That's what you need to be concerned about, is protecting those assets. And the way to do that is you have to be properly insured,
mm-hmm.
okay? So if the unfortunate thing happens and you get into an accident and you cause a school bus to go off the road, you know, in an ice storm, which we had.
Yes.
You got, you
it's
know,
it's actually possible here in Atlanta.
It's possible. You got 12 kids. You got 15 kids on a school bus. You know, you start talking about medical bills, you know, like, you know, calculate real fast. You've got to have proper coverage, you know, to protect against the claims that might be coming your way. And so it really depends on your own situation is the answer to that. So you have to know your own situation. What applies to one person does not necessarily apply to the other. So
right.
One person and what you can afford, you know. One person may need, you know, $1 million in coverage. Another may only be able to afford and only need $25,000 or $30,000, you know, in automobile insurance. So talk with your insurance agent and figure it out.
Right.
They will advise you. But there are people that have the misconception that an umbrella policy, when you talk about $1 million umbrella policy, the minute you say $1 million umbrella policy, they think, oh, I can't afford that.
It's very inexpensive.
It's very inexpensive. Mm-hmm. It's nowhere near the cost that most people think it actually is. And what you get from it and how to get it, it's very affordable.
Now, speaking of being affordable, if you hire an attorney, can you expect to be out of pocket if you use the attorney?
If you come to me?
Yes.
Oh, you can be. No.
A lot of money, huh?
A lot.
You must be that good.
Well, but in personal injury, we deal with what is known as liens. Our clients come to us and they retain us, and not just us, but personal injury lawyers, it's sort of standard in the personal injury community that you deal with clients on a lien basis. That means they come in, they retain your law firm, and when they go into a doctor's office and that sort of thing, they're going to be treated on a lien basis. They're not going to be incurring out-of-pocket expenses every time they walk into the doctor's office. They're going to treat them, and they're going to deliver medical services to them without them coming out of the pocket or producing their benefits card.
Okay.
Those expenses are going to come out of the settlement ultimately at the end of the case. In terms of the lawyer, same thing with us. We underwrite all of the legal costs for the case throughout from beginning to end. So I tell my clients, the only thing, when they come in, we sit down, I tell them, the only thing that you're going to be out of pocket for is the gas in your car to come to my office. Mm-hmm. That's it. Or if we have to go somewhere, the parking expense to go into the parking deck. That's it.
Well, speaking about your office, let's tell our listeners, thank you for being here, and let's tell our listeners how to reach you.
Hagen-law.com. 404-522-7553. We're at 119 North McDonough Street in Decatur. 30030.
Can you say that number again? You kind of ripped through it. I couldn't write it down fast enough.
404-522-7553. It's Bruce Hagen, PC, attorneys, but Hagen-law.com.
Thanks again.
Thank
awesome.
You.
Yeah. And just a reminder to our listeners that Peachtree Offices is actually a sponsor of the show. And Peachtree Offices can be found on our website, AtlantaLegalExperts.com. You can see our logo. And we help attorneys practice anywhere they like and still give them the office image. And on to our next guest. Thank you for listening so quietly over there.
Oh, yeah. No
How
problem.
How are you?
Doing great.
Good
Happy
to see
Tuesday.
You. Nate Hansford, good morning.
Good morning.
Nathaniel Hansford has many years of experience in the workers' compensation field. He spent over 5 years defending insurance companies against personal injury and workers' comp claims. Since 2007, Mr. Hansford has represented injured workers and has used the knowledge he gained as a defense lawyer to help his clients. Due to his experience as an insurance defense attorney, kind of like Mr. Earle, Mr. Hansford has an advantage in understanding the tactics of defense attorneys and provides expertise in getting a better resolution. Mr. Hansford will act to protect your rights and handle all of your workers' comp needs. And you actually do trials as well.
Correct, yeah. Most of the time with workers' comp cases, mm-hmm. they'll resolve before the hearings. Mm-hmm. But we have bench trials in front of administrative law judges. And I would say 15 to 20% of the cases go forward with hearings on certain issues. They can be all issues where a client is not receiving benefits, mm-hmm. is not receiving medical care, and we would have a full-fledged hearing in front of an administrative law judge. Or there could just be a certain issue like surgery not being approved, insurance company denying a surgery, insurance company denying a catastrophic designation on a case where someone is paralyzed or will never be able to work again, and we may have to try that. It's a little more complex.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, you know, I've tried over 50 to 60 cases at different times.
Mm-hmm.
But most cases do get resolved these days before a hearing.
I take it that's better.
It is. I think it's better for the client, mm-hmm. Better for the process.
Sure.
The client's able to get a resolution instead of the delay that can happen with the court process, with appeals, and things can go take longer and longer and longer. It could be 2 years down the road.
Right.
What kind of injuries do you normally tend to see?
You know, all the way from back injuries, neck injuries. You know, I represent folks who've been paralyzed by various accidents, serious, complex accidents, injuries. That's usually the type of cases that we handle. You do see a carpal tunnel case or a knee injury, all different body parts, really, under the circumstances. Depends on the job that each individual has. But we represent folks from, you know, I've represented folks from flight attendants to a minor league hockey player to a professional football player to a construction worker to a maid to someone in a nursing home. Anyone who is employed receiving compensation working for someone would be entitled to workers' comp benefits. Every employer, every company is supposed to have workers' comp benefits if they're three or more employees.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But it's a strict liability system. If you're injured on the job, you're entitled to workers' comp benefits unless there are a few defenses, but most of the time it's strict liability.
Gotcha. So how did you get into the workers' comp side of law?
I think I just kind of fell into it, actually. I was looking for a job on the defense side back in the day, around 2000, and I found a good opportunity working for an insurance company. I like
That's
litigation.
Right.
I like workers' comp. It's fast-paced. I enjoy depositions, hearings, going to court, moving cases along. Unlike what Merlin was talking about with personal injury type cases, there are some differences between workers' comp and personal injury cases. Workers' comp system is a little faster with court hearing dates. The litigation process isn't as drawn out, so you get a resolution a little quicker on mm-hmm. certain issues.
I take it you do work with some personal injury attorneys on occasion? Or
We try to. We mm-hmm. try to handle cases with each other. For instance, if there is someone who's working for FedEx, employed by FedEx, mm-hmm. they're rear-ended by someone. It was the other person's fault. There could be a personal injury case as well as a workers' comp case.
Right.
So we do try to work together with personal injury attorneys as much as possible.
I have a question.
Okay, sure.
So a person injured on the job, should they contact the workers' comp lawyer or the personal injury lawyer first?
Workers' comp, obviously. You know, it's always good to get the workers' comp benefits moving along, get their weekly checks coming in, their treatment, because then the personal injury attorney would, it's a good way to kind of double dip or whatnot. So the treatment would be, you wouldn't have to worry about the liens.
What do you mean by weekly checks?
Well, in Georgia, if you're hurt on the job and it is deemed a compensable case or work-related case, you're entitled to a weekly check for up to 400 weeks, which is almost over 7 years.
Wow.
In Georgia. The maximum is 525 right now.
That's a lot of weekly checks.
That could be, yes. That's why the insurance companies want to resolve their cases. That's why they want to settle usually.
As soon as possible.
Yeah, but that's why you need an attorney to help you out with the complex issues and the settlement process as well. So.
Gotcha. Now tell me, what doctors do you actually recommend these people seeing? What types of doctors?
Well, it depends on the injury,
yeah.
And it depends on the specialty. I enjoy. I have certain doctors I like to send my clients to,
sure.
Who I have a good relationship with. I know that will treat my clients fairly and get them the appropriate medical care, and not, I guess, not suspend their treatment sooner than it should be. Sometimes
okay.
we see certain doctors, unfortunately, won't treat my clients fully, or will not listen to my clients with their complaints and disregard their concerns and say that return them to work a lot sooner than they should be.
Right. So you have a good relationship with these doctors and you refer them out probably
Correct.
More regular than others.
Well, with workers' comp, it's a little different than personal injury. We're stuck with the panel. There's a list of doctors that the injured worker can treat with. If they're injured on the job, the employer is supposed to have a list of doctors. It's supposed to be 6 independent doctors, 1 orthopedic, 1 minority, and usually it's at the in the bulletin board of the office and the and in the break room of the business, and they're required to select from check yours. But they're required to select one of the doctors off that panel, so we don't have as much control with the doctors, but it's always good to have an attorney such as me, a workers' comp attorney, who knows which doctors off that panel would be more beneficial or not to the
right.
to the injured worker.
And they, you, like Merlin was saying, it's good to have an attorney right away because
True.
You're going to know a lot more than what the average worker is going to know. It's because they don't do that. You do that. That's your job.
Correct. Yeah. You need a specialist, like Merlin was saying, someone who understands the system. Unfortunately, the insurance companies are going to work towards their benefit and try to get the injured worker into the doctors they know that may give them a decent, reasonable treatment, but may release them sooner than they should, or they may deny the claim mm-hmm. at the outset before we're able to get in on the case to straighten everything out and move it in the right direction. So it's always good to have a workers' comp attorney, even though the injured worker may be getting benefits and treatment and everything seems smoothly and everything's going well. The system is complex and mm-hmm. Things will pop up where you need someone to guide you along the process.
So what if you just have questions, if you think you might have been injured or if something maybe, and I'm thinking like you have a certain position where it starts to be painful after a while, like it's a physical position. How would you know if you're, do you know what I mean? Like when's a good time to call and ask?
Just give us a call anytime. 770-922-3660 is our number, hansfordlawfirm.com. You can reach us 24/7 anytime we're available. Give us a call and we're happy to answer any questions that concern.
So if you have any questions.
Correct.
You
yeah,
can just
call. Any possible issue that may come up. I'm also licensed in Alabama as well, so I handle some Alabama workers' comp cases, mm-hmm. but primarily just Georgia workers' comp cases.
So tell me, for other than giving you a call, what's the rule of thumb to do when you are injured and you know you're injured on the job?
Yeah, that's a good question. You always want to notify your employer immediately, your supervisor, okay. The day of the accident. You also want to communicate that it was on the job, you were hurt on the job, and that you need to see a doctor. It's always good if you have witnesses who saw the incident as well,
mm-hmm.
but you want to make sure that you communicate that this clearly was on the job, this is what happened, and I need to see a workers' comp doctor, because if you don't do that, they're going to try to find a way to deny your claim.
And right. when you notify your boss, is it just go into his office or her office, or do you recommend putting it in writing? Or
it's always better to put it in writing,
uh-huh.
But and record it possibly if the supervisor were to take photos, anything you can to document it, because unfortunately, a lot of times the companies are going to try to get out of it or try to deny the claim as quickly as possible. So,
you said there was a list of doctors. One includes a minority. Do you deal with a lot of minorities?
Yeah, I deal with minorities all the time. So, yeah. We deal with every
walk of life.
Every walk. Anyone was welcome and accepted. And I know there was a discussion earlier while we were outside in the lobby about illegal immigrants, those kind of things. We represent anyone. It doesn't matter what your status is. We handle, and we have Spanish-speaking of folks in my office as well as Bosnian. So we welcome anyone to please contact our office.
Awesome. And tell us again how they can contact you.
Yeah, they can reach me at 770-922-3660. Again, my office is Nathaniel F. Hansford, LLC, And my website is hansfordlawfirm.com. I have two other attorneys and five other paralegals, and all we do is just workers' comp. So feel free to give us a call with any questions or concerns. We're happy to answer them.
Great. Thank you so much for being here.
Yes. Thank you.
And here we have Lorena Seide. Did I say that right?
You did. You did. You said it right.
I'm so used to saying Seide.
That's okay.
And Ms. Seide is a partner at Seide Law Group, where she concentrates her practice in all areas of bankruptcy law. She offers clients quality legal services in all aspects of federal bankruptcy law and is committed to providing personal attention and affordable solutions to each and every client's financial obstacles. Prior to starting Seide Law Group, LLC, Ms. Seide was founding partner of the consumer bankruptcy firm Seide & Wells, LLC, for 8 years, and that's when you guys were with us in Midtown. I remember that. And she, Ms. Seide, has tried numerous matters before the bankruptcy courts in the Northern District of Georgia involving creditor actions to enforce foreclosure sales, debtor objections to creditor claims, motions for sanctions regarding creditor abuse, and various other matters. She is also a member of the State Bar of Georgia, American Bankruptcy Lawyer Institute, and the American Bar Association. And you can actually read more about her on AtlantaLegalExperts.com. So how did you get into bankruptcy?
It was actually interesting. I was a corporate attorney before, and it was when I started, the tech market was booming. I was a computer programmer that had went to law school because I wanted to do tech law. But when the market started crashing, I had just started practicing, and they were moving people around at my previous firm. And so I made the decision that I was going to look for another area, and bankruptcy just happened to be an area where I could get started with little experience. And so I had been one of those people in law school that said I never wanted to go to court. I wanted to strictly do corporate law. But when I got there, I loved it. Bankruptcy law is a great combination of lots of other areas of law. Mm-hmm. I use my corporate experience every day. And I really feel like I help people. And the client interaction is wonderful. We see immediate results. Mm-hmm. And so I fell in love with it and have been doing it ever since.
That's awesome. So people say, you know, if I'm going broke and it's going to destroy my credit and all the negative things of actually filing for bankruptcy, tell me some positive things.
Sure. I think that you know, the hardest part for my clients is to actually come and see me. There are so many misconceptions about bankruptcy. And, you know, there's just a lot of, it's very emotional. Mm-hmm. And once my clients come in to see me, I mean, almost all of them tell me, I feel like I've had a weight lifted from my shoulders. You know, one of the big misconceptions is if I file bankruptcy, I'm not going to have credit for 10 years. I'm not going to be able to buy anything. And that's just simply not the case. For the majority of our clients, in 24 months, they have their credit back in terms of a good credit score.
Well, that's nice.
If they contact, you know, most of the major lenders after 24 months, you can get a mortgage again. Mm-hmm. So I hope people, you know, you can go on the internet and there's some useful information and then there's some that's not.
Sure. Call an attorney.
Yeah, exactly. Call an attorney. I think being able to present options to our clients is one of our biggest strengths. Sometimes people come in and they don't need to file bankruptcy. We may be looking at an issue where we just need to go in and do a workout or a settlement. Mm-hmm. It really depends. I think most of our clients are just very relieved once they leave our office.
Either way,
mm-hmm. Once you deal with those debt issues, you can get on with your life. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. our clients, you know, they have, you know, physical stress. They've had heart attacks, strokes because of debt. And, you know, in the scheme of things, that's an easy thing we can take care of. Unlike, you know, personal injury where, you know, there's physical injury or whatnot, at least in what we do, there is a solution, which is usually pretty quick, that can get clients back on their feet and back to, you know, back to their life.
What do you normally see if you have this analytic, the cause for, you know, some of these clients to come in? Like, what causes, like, I know divorce sometimes.
Yes, divorce is always a biggie. Job loss. Nowadays, most families, it's a two-income, you know, earner. And if one person loses their job, even if it's temporarily, it can cause a snowball effect. You miss three mortgage payments in Georgia, and they, you know, line you up for foreclosure. The foreclosure process in Georgia, we're a non-judicial foreclosure state. It can come really fast. And unfortunately, a lot of lenders are not really willing to work with people. And so we, you know, a lot of people who have always paid their bills, you know, have had great credit. They just hit a little bump, and all of a sudden, everything is coming down on them at one time. You know, definitely job loss, medical issues. We have a lot of clients who have had a personal injury. And, you know, while they're trying to sort out their personal injury claim, you know, they need to file for bankruptcy protection. You know, those are two big reasons.
And what I know, there's, I guess, a few different chapters of bankruptcies. Like, how do you know a 7, an 11, a 13?
Sure. the area that we specialize in is on the consumer side. That would be Chapter 7 and Chapter 13. A Chapter 13 is a debt consolidation and repayment plan. So most of our clients that are involved in 13 usually have an issue that maybe their car has been repossessed or about to be repossessed. They have tax issues, child support. We can actually restructure child support arrearage, or a mortgage issue. We can do a repayment plan, and we can stretch it out for 5 years. They get on a repayment plan. Sometimes their unsecured debt, like credit cards or medical bills, things like that, they don't even have to pay back in full.
Oh, wow.
So it can be a great
relief.
The other type of bankruptcy, what I think most people are familiar with, is the Chapter 7, which is, a lot of people refer to it as a straight bankruptcy, because you're not restructuring anything, you're just getting rid of your unsecured debt.
Just wiping it out.
So those are the two primary that we deal with. There's also Chapter 11, which most people are familiar with, as a business reorganization, or it's for individuals who their debt limits are higher than what's allowed in a 13. But most of the time in 11s, you're going to see it's a business issue.
Is it always a consumer, or do you help also businesses if they deal with?
We do. We do work with businesses. I deal with a lot of entrepreneurs who obviously, when you have your startup, you're guaranteeing a lot of debt. We deal with a lot of entrepreneurs on that issue. We do a lot of workouts because there may be a dispute. There could be leasing. There could be a licensing issue. And so we try to get involved and do a workout. And I think because of our bankruptcy background, the other party realizes that, you know, if this person bankrupts, they'll get nothing. And so we can at least try to resolve it. A win-win situation for both sides.
For everybody.
So,
and then how do you normally work with other attorneys? I mean, obviously sometimes divorce attorneys, but workers' comp?
Divorce, workers' comp, personal injuries. We work family law attorneys. We work closely with them. When a client files bankruptcy, that's always a biggie for any of these other cases. So, you know, the first thing we're going to tell our clients is, you know, are you in a workers' comp case? Is there a personal injury case? Are you in divorce actions? Because we need to make sure that we're communicating with other counsel. So that they are still able to, you know, to recover, that there's no roadblocks in their other counsel's cases. So we work closely with lots of different other attorneys to coordinate to make sure everything is running smoothly.
And do you charge a contingency like these guys, or do you have a flat fee?
We don't. We actually it's a flat fee. One of the nice things about bankruptcy, and again, as I think a popular misconception from what's online or what people hear, is you don't usually have to have any money up front, other than the court fee, which a court fee for filing a Chapter 7 is $335. To start a Chapter 13, the court will charge you $310, but attorney fees for 13s are put into a plan.
Okay.
That's part of your monthly payment. Our fees are overseen by the courts to make sure that, you know, attorneys are not gouging clients or whatnot. So it's a very, very great process for folks, because you really don't have to have a lot of money to get started, and you can put that bankruptcy protection, you know, right in place, and it's going to give you some breathing time.
You don't have any money to get started.
Right, exactly. Exactly. That's always the number one question, is I can't afford, you know, I don't think I can afford, you know, to file bankruptcy. But the courts will even let folks pay their court fees in installments.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, for as little as $75, you can start your court fee. So,
and you have several offices. Is that just so that you can help more people? What's the idea
yes.
behind that?
When I had first started doing this, our office was downtown, and we, you know, we still have a lot of people that go to our downtown office, but we realized, I mean, we were getting calls from Gainesville, from Noonan, Douglasville, Marietta, and, you know, most folks don't like to come downtown, deal with the parking and all that good stuff. So we have right now 10 offices, and are, you know, they're all manned by attorneys. We like our clients to meet with an attorney, not necessarily a paralegal. Mm. And so, you know, we do that so that it's in a comfortable environment. You don't have to pay for parking. It's very easy access.
Nice.
So tell me, I asked this on social media for everybody to listen in. What can your clients keep if they file for bankruptcy?
So the nice thing is you can keep everything if you want. Uh-huh. So there, you know, you may have to pay, you know, pay everyone back in full. But if you decide that you want to keep, you know, your expensive car or your expensive house, you can keep it. But you're going to have to pay everybody back because it wouldn't be fair to allow you to keep a brand new Porsche and not pay your credit card bills. But that is one thing a lot of people, they think that when they go in, they just have to give everything up. I would say the majority of my clients keep all of their assets.
Wow.
They keep all of their assets.
That's surprising.
And so, I mean, you know, another nice thing that is now available over the past few years is we can remove junior liens on mortgages. So
is that like a second mortgage?
Correct. Oh. And, you know, for some of our clients, they have third mortgages. So, you know, due to the housing market, we have a lot of people who they're underwater on their homes and they might think about letting their house go. But then once they realize, well, hey, I can remove my second mortgage, you know, it all of a sudden becomes something that's doable, that they want to keep that their home, and we can just remove their second mortgage, and then they're just paying one mortgage payment.
And they get all the equity back?
Well,
if there's equity?
Well, if there's no equity in order to strip the lien. We call it lien stripping. But for some of our clients, they're, you know, maybe in a year or two, they're going to have equity. So it's better to go ahead and do it now when there's no equity touching that second mortgage, so that, you know, in a couple of years, and like right now, the housing market's going back up,
yeah.
They'll have equity in their property.
So how much do you see the economy affecting your business? Like, were you hopping in 2007?
Yeah, we were. It was a different kind of bankruptcy. So what we've seen over the past 4 years, most people have been filing Chapter 7 because they didn't want to keep their home. You know, they would have to let their cars go. We're just seeing people just let everything go. The market is coming back, and we're seeing in our practice now more and more people have assets that they want to keep. And so we're seeing people file Chapter 13 so that they can just reorganize their debt, remove the mortgage, keep the home. So, we've definitely we see a shift in our practice from the economy, most definitely.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. And if you could tell our listeners how they can reach you.
Sure. I can be reached by phone at 404-889-8663. Our website is www.saedilawgroup.com. And you can also go online and you can chat with our support staff, and we'll answer any questions or concerns that you have.
Awesome. Awesome. We're glad you're here. And we're going to move on to somebody who's been very quiet this whole time. Thank you. Mark Cobb with the Cobb Law Group, a statewide construction law practice. I grew up in Atlanta. Lots of construction. The state bird is the crane. And so now he's going to actually tell us a little bit about it. He is the founding partner of the Cobb Law Group, a construction law firm with two offices serving the state of Georgia. Mark represents various types of construction professionals, including project owners and general contractors, but his practice remains focused primarily on the needs of subcontractors and suppliers. He has filed and prosecuted thousands of material man's liens and payment bond claims and has been instrumental in implementing Georgia's construction notice provisions. He is a member of the ABA Forum on Construction Law and regularly speaks at construction law seminars. In addition, he teaches in the MBA program at Thomas University. Mark received his JD from Washington and Lee University School of Law and is admitted to practice in Georgia and Alabama. So tell me a little bit how you got into construction law. And I think you're my first guest that has done construction law, has talked about construction law.
Well, thank you, Emily. I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk about construction law a little bit. You know, construction law, when I tell people about it, I simply say it's business law on steroids. It's basically, 20 to 100 page contracts that take 1 to 5 years to complete, involving as many as 200 different parties, price changes, accidents. Basically, a construction law practitioner sits in the middle of a construction project and then farms out to other lawyers, other specialists, different claims, such as workers' comp and personal injury and bankruptcy and other areas of law. It's just a complex business litigation.
So it's a perfect fit for you to be here.
I enjoy it very much, yes.
and the experts around the table. So tell me, you prepare and file a lot of material men's liens. Can you tell the listeners about these types of liens?
Sure. American law is very unique in that it's based upon English law, of course. And so when you go back to the history, English law, at least English property law, is set up around the concept that landowners are part of the landed gentry, and those that work for the landowners are poor. Well, of course, things have changed, but those concepts still resonate here even in the 21st century. So if someone is building a house, building a commercial property, building any project at all, and someone down the line, a laborer, someone who supplies materials, a subcontractor, really anybody, if they use their services or their products to improve the property, they can then claim a lien against the real estate. And so it gives them an ability to collect, not only collect with the person that they may contract with. A laborer, for example, may have a contract with a general contractor. They can always sue them for their lost wages. But if the general contractor files bankruptcy, or if the general contractor absconds or just refuses to pay, that laborer can also place a lien against the house or the building that he helped construct, and could eventually foreclose against that lien and recoup his losses.
That's good.
Who do you tend to represent? The general contractor, the laborer, the architect, who's your client?
We represent all of those, project developers on down to laborers. Our focus really is on specialty trade subcontractors and material men. So we go down to what's called third tier. You have the owner, the general contractor, then you get subcontractors, sub-subcontractors, and suppliers. And we tend to stay with, I'll say, the little guys, although
that's
some of them
nice.
Are huge companies.
Mm-hmm.
Any specific industries? Like, I know you said residential. Do you tend to go commercial?
Tend to work on more commercial projects just because the dollar amounts are more substantial. Mm-hmm. And also, just through basically luck, we do a lot of equipment rental companies, small and large. Just sort of a niche practice that we've been able to develop.
So tell me, you talked about subcontractors. Is there's a subcontractor law?
Sure. It's historically it's been construction law. Mm-hmm. And I'd say in the last 5 to 10 years, you're seeing as lawyers become more and more specialized, you see new developments in subcontractor law. Each level, again, owner, general contractor, subcontractor, material man, each owner has his own rights and his own responsibilities. And so subcontractor law is developing into its own area. And a couple of years ago, the American Bar Association began working on a book called Construction Subcontracting. It was the first book ever on subcontractor law. I was lucky enough to be a contributor to that. It came out in 2014, and now we're beginning to see more clients recognizing us as subcontractor lawyers.
That's awesome. So that's going to be another niche for you.
Exactly.
Now, tell me other areas that you serve.
We serve the entire state of Georgia. One great thing with the internet is it allows us to file liens and make abatement bond claims throughout the entire state, which means several advantages to our clients. Of course, it means lower cost, and also that we're really do focus on this, so we know this area quite well. I am also admitted in Alabama, and we've recently hired a lawyer who's admitted in Florida. And although we're not actively marketing those states, we have a number of Georgia clients that cross over state lines to work on construction projects. And so we're able to keep that business in-house and help them in that capacity as well.
Where is your office?
We have two offices, both fully staffed and manned. One is in North Metro Atlanta, and the other is in Thomasville, Georgia. So we have a North Georgia office and a South Georgia office.
Nice. So I read on your website, it said virtual law firm.
Yes.
So can you tell me a little more about that?
Absolutely. Some of what we do is mechanical. And the people, the construction industry professionals know exactly what they need. So for example, a lien waiver. Before a payment is made, they want the person who is receiving the payment to sign a document that says, we will not file a lien if we receive this payment. They may need a lawyer to help them with that. But to call us and pay an hourly fee or call anybody can be very expensive. So we offer the same documents online. And so for $15, you can go online, fill out the information. It comes to my desk, literally. I look at it, and then I return it to the client within 24 to 48 hours, and they have the document for a much lower cost, and there's been no direct contact. It's been completely virtual.
Right. That's very convenient.
It is very convenient, particularly for the small subcontractor, because they may work all day and get home, have dinner, and then at 9 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night need this document, and they'll fill it out from their own computer.
Now, how do they find your website?
We're at cobblawgroup.net, cobblawgroup.net.
So tell me, what's a good day in your field?
Oh, a good day is when I'm able to recover money that is owed to a subcontractor or a supplier. That's that happens a lot, thankfully.
And a typical bad day for you?
When GCs file bankruptcy, it does cause a lot of questions, and it does delay the process. Usually we can still recover because of the lien. We get to jump over the general contractor and look to the owner for recovery, but it does take more work and more time.
So do you go to, like, state court or do you have a statement of claim in magistrate court? Like, how do you collect these funds? Do you go to court for that, or do you just negotiate?
We certainly can go to court. I will say this. When it comes to actually foreclosing against a lien, most property owners, homeowners, or commercial property don't want that lien foreclosed. And so we do enter into negotiations and almost always are able to resolve it somehow.
So what other interests or hobbies that you have?
A lot of things. We, we're real people. I'm very active I'm active on a board called the Vashti Center, which is a residential and an outpatient clinic for troubled children. I love to play tennis, and I do a little bit of wing shooting on the side too.
Are you from Georgia originally?
I'm actually from Pensacola, but after going to law school in Virginia, came to Atlanta, worked right here at a firm in Buckhead, and have been in the area ever since.
Great, great. Well, thank you so much for being on our show, and if you will tell our listeners how they can reach you, and then we might have just a couple minutes for open forum if anybody else has any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Emily. Again, my name is Mark Cobb. It's the Cobb Law Group. Our website is cobblawgroup.net. I can be reached at 770-886-5890, and my email is mark@cobblawgroup.net.
And I see you're all over social media, too.
We do our best.
Yeah. Does anybody have any questions? We have a couple minutes. Anyone?
Marilyn?
Anyone?
Ladies first.
Well, I guess my question to everyone is, how forthcoming are your clients when you ask them if they filed for bankruptcy? Because I know you all ask them that in your initial intake or consultation. Do you get a lot of surprises, or are people pretty forthcoming?
My clients, they're pretty forthcoming.
Okay.
That is a question on the on the checklist, for deposition preparation, trial. It's typically not going to come out at trial, but they need to know that it's not. But they're forthcoming. Yeah.
Mine typically are forthcoming, but sometimes there can be some hiccups at the settlement phase. We're in the process of getting the claim resolved, the settlement document signed, and then you find out there's a trustee.
Right.
And that may hold up the process and delay it, and there has to be some of those negotiations that take place with you guys before
right.
we can settle the case.
Right.
So sometimes that can cause an issue.
Okay. How many times, if possible, can you file for bankruptcy? Can you just keep going back and cleaning that out?
Well, you can file a Chapter 7 once every 8 years, but a Chapter 13, you can file anytime. I have clients that come out of a Chapter 7, and maybe they were trying to work out with their mortgage company, but they come out of the 7, and then it turns out they're going to be facing a foreclosure, or it could be another issue like child support arrears or something like that. And so they can just turn around and file a 13 to do a reorganization.
Okay.
You can sometimes file a Chapter 13, two times in a row. If the case gets dismissed, there was an issue, you can usually just turn around and at least refile once before you're looking at any kind of restriction timing-wise when you can get back into bankruptcy.
You guys deal, I mean, at least the three, PI, comp, and bankruptcy, really emotionally charged individuals. How do you kind of alleviate that? It'd be nice?
Well, you know, from my clients, it's listening.
Yeah.
It's listening.
I don't know how to do that.
you know, people want you to hear their story. They want you to know what happened. And I think that's one of the advantages our firm has always had is we purposely are a mid-sized firm because we want to know our clients. You know, we don't want to pass them off and never see them again. And so, you know, it is very personal and people just, they want you to listen. And I think that, just as attorneys, I think that's, you know, something that, you know, you've got to know how to do. Everybody knows we can talk all day long, but you know, you want to listen.
Really?
Yeah.
Hence the show.
But I just want to interject one thing. We were in before the show, we were in the lobby, we were talking, about a sensitive issue.
The green room.
Yeah, the green room. So we were discussing a pretty sensitive issue about something that we all have in common, and it sort of permeates each of our practices. And we were talking about immigration. It's sort of a dual-tiered question that I have. We were talking about the immigration issue in the context of Hispanic,
yes,
individuals who come involved with what I do, what we all do, and the intimidation factor of the legal process and the misconception that, I mean, I have a deposition, my client's being deposed, and I have to prepare them for the deposition, and I have to tell them what questions they're going to encounter. Okay, and one of the questions that's going to come up is, what is your immigration status? And they're already concerned about that issue. So, you know, we were talking about that, but something occurred to me during this this forum, and it's this. Specifically in terms of bankruptcy,
mm-hmm.
Let's say hypothetically, individual gets deported, they filed bankruptcy, they get deported. What happens with that bankruptcy?
It would depend. It would depend on what stage of the case that they're in. So in a Chapter 13 case, you're looking at a debt consolidation repayment plan. Technically, there's only one hearing, which is usually 30 days after they file their initial case, called the 341 hearing. That's really the only hearing they're required to be at. So say they go to the hearing, they get their case approved the next month, and then they get deported. As long as they are making payments on their case can continue.
Hmm.
So, you know, it would be an issue if they had not gone to that hearing yet. And most likely their case would be dismissed if they could not attend, because that is a requirement. But, you know, as long as they've already been to that hearing, they could still get their case approved.
Okay. You know, one other question. I was Friday, last week, talking with a trustee,
mm-hmm.
for one of my clients, and this is really crazy. So the trustee says, "Well, I don't agree. That's not enough. I don't think that's a fair settlement for this case." Well, of course, he knows nothing about personal injury. Okay, so like I said earlier, I refer back to my point. You need a specialist. Well, mm-hmm. he's not a specialist on personal injury, and he's telling me that's not a fair settlement. So he's basically disagreeing and blocking the settlement.
Yeah.
Okay, which he has authority to do.
Yes.
Right?
That's correct.
But we also know that there's an incentive for, on his part,
that is correct,
for it to be a higher settlement.
That is correct.
Well, I understand that. I'm not a specialist in bankruptcy, but I do know that as well. So he mentioned something that I'd never heard before, an abandonment, right?
Right. The trustee can just abandon, just say, you know what, it's not worth my time, and they can abandon the asset.
Okay. So I had been on the phone with him probably at about 40 minutes at that point, and when he said abandonment, I'm like, no, I know what abandonment means. Now you're talking my language. I can be done with you, and we're done. My question is, abandonment, does that mean that the bankruptcy is done?
No, it doesn't mean the bankruptcy is done. It just means that the trustee had said there's an asset, and then the trustee says, you know what, I'm just going to let it go. But the bankruptcy can still be going on.
Oh, really? Okay.
Great questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's full of them.
Good. Very good.
Well, we thank all of our guests for being here today. And tune in next week. Again, this is Emily Rowell with Atlanta Legal Experts.
Hey, tell us about our sponsor today again, Peachtree Offices.
Peachtree Offices and 3A Law Practice Management. Just go to www.atlantalegalexperts.com. And if you're listening, you're there. So just click on the logos on the website. And we look forward to seeing you next week.